and a limited amount of Zitzfleisch. So I'll start off with one that's addressed to Dr. Finkelstein, actually two questions that I can combine reasonably well. The first questioner asked about the legitimacy of the PLO. The questioner feels that as a terrorist organization, should it be allowed to negotiate with Israel? And the other question is the PLO no longer involved in terrorist activities?
Well, here I would say I have to agree with the words of the former head of Israeli intelligence, Yehoshafat Harkabi. To describe the PLO as a terrorist organization is simply a slander against all the Palestinian people, because everybody recognizes, including virtually every member of the Israeli government, that the PLO is the representative of the Palestinian people, represents the quasi-totality of the Palestinian people. To describe the PLO as a terrorist organization is in effect to say at this point in time that every Palestinian is a terrorist. To my thinking, that's a straight out racist statement, and I frankly I'll simply put it aside for a moment. Now, as to whether Israel has committed terrorist acts, as to whether the PLO has committed terrorist acts, in my view, obviously yes. The question is, applying again the same standards. Has the state of Israel committed terrorist attacks? Didn't they kill some 20,000 Palestinians and Lebanese during the June 1982 war? Haven't they killed some 600 Palestinian children in the past 23 months? If one bothers to look at the facts, look at the statistics, and look at the documentary record, we come up with the following. According to official Israeli statistics, between 1967 and the present day, there have been approximately, and now I'm using the Israeli numbers, there have been approximately 400 Israeli victims of Palestinian terrorism. That is 400 victims of Palestinian terrorism, Israeli victims, in the course of fully two decades. Now, the fact of the matter is, there have been more Palestinian unarmed men, women, and children who have been killed in the last 23 months by the state of Israel. Now, it seems to me, if Israel's record does not disqualify it from representing the Israeli people, why should the record of the PLO, far more puny, why should its record disqualify it from representing the Palestinian people? We're simply talking about applying the same standards across the board.
Now for a question to Wolf Blitzer. Why should the Israeli government refuse to acknowledge Yasser Arafat as the PLO representative when former leaders of Israel, i.e., this writer means E.G., Menachem Begin, belonged to terrorist groups that led atrocities against the British and the Palestinians in defense of Zionism?
Well, far be it from me to give the Israelis too much advice. They have a lot of smart people over there, and they have a debate going on. Let them decide what they are, what they aren't capable of doing. If they make mistakes, the Israeli people make mistakes, if the Israeli government makes mistakes, they're the ones who are going to have to obviously pay the price for their mistakes. If they're smart, of course, they'll reap the benefits. There's no doubt in my mind that if the Palestinians were smart right now, they would certainly follow the lead of the Jews who established Israel. In other words, instead of reaching out for the whole loaf of bread right away, grab what is possible. The tragedy of the Palestinians over all of these decades, unfortunately, has been that they've missed opportunities. In 1947, when the United Nations recommended the partition of Palestine into a Jewish and an Arab state, the Jews reluctantly accepted that resolution. It was the Palestinians, backed by the Arab world, of course, who went to war to defeat that resolution. They lost. The same went on for the years that followed. It wasn't until recently, last December, when Yasser Arafat, the leader of the PLO, of course, reluctantly, grudgingly uttered the magic words, words that were in effect dictated by Washington, recognizing Israel's right to exist, recognizing UN resolutions 242 and 338, and renouncing terrorism. Well, I'm not surprised that those statements were greeted with a degree of skepticism in Israel, given all the history that unfolded ever since. There is an opportunity right now. It's not a great opportunity, but great opportunities don't come along very often. The opportunity right now is to get some sort of Israeli-Palestinian dialogue off the ground in the real world. And as you know, last May, the Israeli government, a national unity government consisting of both big parties, Labor and Likud, came forward with a proposal that the Palestinians who live in the West Bank and Gaza themselves have free and democratic elections and pick a delegation that would negotiate over the course of a five-year transitional period a final status for the West Bank and Gaza. And if the PLO is as popular as it is in the West Bank and Gaza, the PLO should not fear those elections because presumably pro-PLO Palestinians will be elected. And since then, there has been a back and forth, a to and fro, trying to come up with some procedure, and Egypt, of course, is very much involved, and now Secretary of State Baker has put forward his own 5 points. The Israeli cabinet last Sunday accepted them with some strings attached, to be sure. The U.S. is now waiting for the Egyptian, and in parentheses, PLO response. I hope it's a favorable response. I hope it's a response, as the Israeli response was, with strings attached, because then the process will go forward. There's no military solution to this Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Anybody who thinks so is foolish and is predicting, in effect, doom and gloom, continued warfare tensions. There is only a political solution, a political compromise, which neither side will be totally happy with, but one that both eventually will be able to live with. That opportunity exists right now. Certainly the United States, this Bush administration, is going to have to play a very serious role, because without the U.S. involvement, there won't be any serious movement. I hope the U.S. will do so. Whenever there have been steps forward, and there have been steps forward over these 40 years, the Israeli-Egyptian peace treaty, of course, being the most significant. But before that, the Israeli-Egyptian disengagement of forces agreement, and even the Israeli-Syrian disengagement of forces agreement, they occurred only with a very active U.S. involvement. And I really hope the Bush administration follows in the footsteps of Jimmy Carter when he was involved, Henry Kissinger when he was involved, because without that kind of active U.S. role, unfortunately, the Israelis, the Palestinians, and much of the rest of the Arab world are going to be doomed to this kind of continued tension, potential warfare, which we've seen for so long.
I'd like to briefly comment. Give me half a moment.
I want to get a response.
It seems to me that once again we have the problem of the documentary record, namely the problem of facts. What did that proposal by the Shamir National Unity Government actually say? First of all, let us recall the basis of the National Unity Government, the basis of it, the document on which it was founded, stated A, there will be no negotiations with the PLO, that was one condition for the National Unity Government, and B, there would be no Palestinian state. Unfortunately, Mr. Blitzer neglected to mention that. What did the Shamir peace proposal state? Look at the preamble to that proposal. Number one, it said, this was the context for the election, the crucial context. Under no circumstances would there be negotiations with the PLO. Under no circumstances would we acknowledge or recognize the formation of a Palestinian state. Those were the preconditions for elections. That's what the proposal said. Furthermore, within that same week, Prime Minister Shamir said that Palestinians supporting the PLO would not be eligible to run in the elections. It seems to me on the crucial questions, namely the right to self-determination and the right to choose the leadership that you want to represent you, the Shamir proposal was explicitly and unequivocally rejectionist.
The chair,